Podcast Help Desk number 78 for February 3rd, 2016.
The Podcast Help Desk is where we go deep into the technology of podcasting, help you with the problems you may run into, and when we have a chance, review new gadgets, services, and solutions for podcasters. To keep your podcast running smoothly, it takes some tech. That's what Podcast Help Desk is here for. To smooth out the geek speak and put it in, more or less, plain English. The main audience for this podcast is those who have podcasts and want to tweak the tech to get better sound, a better website, a more reliable feed, or a more streamlined workflow. Also, for podcasting beginners that don't want to make all the mistakes themselves. Here's your host, Mike Dell.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever the case may be. This is Mike, and I have a guest virtually in the studio with me today. Hello, Jim, and introduce yourself.
Hi, Mike. Great to be on Podcast Help Desk. You know, this is one of the podcasts that lands in my weekly list of podcasts that I listen to. And so it's always great to be on with you. Of course, I have my own network over at theaverageguy.tv, and we have a home Gadget Geeks podcast there. Although in your community, probably better known for the time I spend with the Jam and Dave Jackson over there at the Help the Podcast, or Ask the Podcast Coach. Listen to me. I don't even know the name of my own podcast, askthepodcastcoach.com, that we do on Saturday mornings.
Right, so, right. Yeah, and I was just telling you that I was on the last one since you were missing.
I was missing this morning. I had some other things I have to do. This time of the year, February, is really busy for me, and so I miss a few. But that's the great thing about that show is that other people can pick it up, and Dave can have other co-hosts pretty easy.
Yeah, and like I said, we had a good time. Daniel Lewis and myself and Dave, and we had some guy from Russia come in there and wanted to complain about Blab. So that was kind of fun.
Blab is such an interesting platform because it almost spurs more conversation about itself than it does about anything, right? So people jump on, and I always find that most podcasts go to, all they end up talking about is Blab by the time they're done. So if you're out on Blab, you haven't used it yet, blab.im, give it a try. But it does seem like a lot of conversations default back to Blab.
Yeah, when podcasting first started, all the podcasters were just talking about podcasting. And that's kind of how I started this show. It was like, well, you know what? Every other show that I do, I talk about podcasting for half of it. So why don't I just get that all out of my system here? And then I don't have to do that on my other shows.
No, right on. And I'll tell you, Mike, the reason I listen to it is for some of that blueberry news. So for me, you're an insider. We get an opportunity to get some of that news in. And so there's a lot of other great things that you bring to this podcast. But I do like the fact that we've got you on the blueberry side. And I find that helpful.
Yeah, and you know, I don't want to make this show all about blueberry, but yeah, you know, there's shows out there that focus on other platforms, and so you know, we needed one that focused on the blueberry platform. And I focus on a lot of other things. And you know, last week I talked about my workflow. It really had nothing to do with, you know, with the platform that I'm on, but that's the reason you're on. In the next segment, we're going to talk about how you do your workflow.
Yeah, that's one of those things I'd encourage you to do if you're listening to somebody else's podcast. I heard that. I was driving home, and I immediately took a mental note, and I said, I got to contact Mike. I want to talk about my workflow. This is just one of those areas where, and not because I do it, I mean, I do it differently than Mike does, but I think this is an area we don't talk a lot about in podcasting from beginning to end as podcasters. And so I thought, you know, you talked about yours. I do it a little bit different. I'll talk about mine. I'll encourage you to have some other folks. Maybe you're a podcaster. You can contact Mike and work through your workflow. We learn from each other. So I think it's just good to talk about it.
Yeah. And my workflow changes. I did one probably a year and a half ago where I was doing things completely different. And I have the capability to do this, as we used to say, live to the hard drive, or I could actually go live, you know, and everything. But, you know, I tend to work better if I work through a subject or a segment and, you know, get that out of my system, then go on to the next one. You know, a lot of people work a lot better live, and, you know, I'm just not one of them.
And I am. This is the difference, is I don't do anything. I don't do a solo podcast, and I only do my podcast live. I can't imagine a world where I would not get instant feedback from the audience. And so for me. I've tried doing solo. In fact, the only solo podcast I ever did was about my workflow. That's the only time I've ever done that. And it was actually after a live show. And so I sat down, I thought, yeah, I talked about this. I had to record, you know, I ought to document this. And so I did it the opposite way. I spoke about it first, I documented it second. And so I've got some, you know, out of my sight at theaverageguy.tv, I've got a workflow through. It's really the second half. It's after I record it, but it's good. I think it's good for us to talk about these things and just kind of go over them and get some tips from each other.
Right. Sounds good. But let's get to some news. I actually put together a little bit of news this week. Big one for me was Apple TV updated, and they added the podcast app back into Apple TV. I don't know how many people listen to audio podcasts on their Apple TV, but I used to watch a lot of video podcasts, and I don't do that so much anymore because my Apple TV that I got didn't do podcasts. So now it does, and now I watch some of these podcasts that I haven't watched in a long time.
Yeah, I don't see this as being a big boom for the audio only. I don't think a lot of people are going to turn this on their TV. However, there is a genre of podcasting, and it kind of blends in with our YouTubers, or what my daughter calls YouTubers, that are creating really good YouTube content, and it's entertaining to watch. And I think they'll move, more of that content will move into a podcast form, right, into an RSS feed, having media enclosure. And I think this is where this comes in handy. So as more of that gets more popular and they begin to take that YouTube content and push it into a video RSS feed, I think this fits in nicely. I'm not sure, Mike, anybody wants to watch me talking to you on the TV. You know, I'm not sure there's a lot of value there, but certainly there is some content that would make its way over from YouTube.
Yeah, the one that in particular that I used to watch a lot is CNET's Car Tech, or whatever they call it. They keep changing the name of it. But, you know, it's car reviews and whatnot and car tech stuff. And they're just short little, under 10-minute videos. And I like to stack a bunch of those up and watch them. Or sometimes TED Talks.
TED would be perfect. I think Callie Lewis on the tech side, she doesn't call herself that anymore, but she had highly produced tech videos that were more geared towards a video audience than they were just audio.
Exactly. Yeah, she was probably one of the... Oops, sorry about that. No. But anyway, she was probably one of the first video podcasters out there to get any sort of success.
Yeah, it's just there's a ton of production value, and what she does takes extra work, and they're not one take wonders, and they do take time to produce the video. I think, you know, we say audio is six times the, you know, you record the audio, and then it takes about six times that amount to get it edited and produced and updated and put out and advertised. I think video is twice that by the time you get to it, because it takes so much. You can't splice it as easy, and so it takes so much. We got to do so many more retakes than you would do on the audio side. So you have to be careful what you wish for from that standpoint. I don't see a lot of what we do making its way into this Apple TV app, but I do think there's a genre out there where that will start to take advantage of it.
Right. And then I could have also, you know, gone with Roku or whatever, one of those other boxes, and there's plenty of podcasters, video podcasters that have their own app, or, you know, Blueberry has an app called MyCast that's up there on Roku and a bunch of the other places where you can aggregate video podcasts. But I disconnected my Roku and put my Apple TV in there, so, you know, I was kind of without those for a while. But anyway, it's an interesting thing. Just, you know, just like the Google thing we all talk about, Google getting into podcasting, it's not going to make a big bump, but, it does some, and it has a use. I like the video. For video podcasting, I'd rather sit in my recliner and watch it on the big screen than watch it on my phone or something.
Sure, for sure.
So let's see, another outfit jumping into podcasting a little deeper anyway, as Amazon's gearing up to add podcast content to their Audible service, and they're hiring a bunch of comedians and doing original content, which is interesting.
Yeah, and this is another area where I think the comedians can lead the way, and I think this is a valuable platform for podcasters, because there are a whole bunch of people who are I mean, I think there's millions. I don't know what the last count is, but I think there are millions of audio or Audible listeners out there that when they find out they can get content rich podcast environment, you know, podcast content on their right there in Audible, man, that could, I mean, that could kind of pay off. I think the question will be, what's the vetting process for these podcasts? Like, we already know iTunes is a mess because there's tons of podcasts out there that don't have, they're not being updated, right? We know that. We podcasters complain about it all the time. I think if Audible can curate and find a way to get the best ones in there, but still let some of the average guy stuff in there as well, like me, I think there's some chance to have this platform be very valuable. I don't know. What do you think, Mike?
Yeah, I don't know whether they're planning on opening it up to anybody or if they're just going to do their own thing. But, you know, when they're calling it a podcast, I would assume they're going to be taking it from RSS feeds. So maybe they are going to curate it, maybe a list of podcasts that they'll bring into Audible or, you know, who knows. But it's kind of interesting that they're starting with the comedians.
Well, that's, I think that's because that's what's popular right now. And it's to be honest, it's perfect Audible content. And so that makes a nice, kind of makes a nice marriage there between the two. And I think they'll get some traction out of it. I would say, Mike, if they would reach out to kind of our group of podcasters and allow them to advertise, you know, I think Audible's kind of made its run. I don't think it's growing that much, is it? I mean, we still hear Audible commercials, but I don't think they're growing like they were at one point in time. Imagine turning the whole army of podcasters now saying, "Hey, you can find me on Audible." That might restart or improve their subscription basis. You know, maybe you have to have a minimum subscription and you get access to all the podcasts kind of deal, so that you, for that amount, just like Prime is doing, right? Where they say, "Hey, they keep adding services to Prime." It would be interesting if Audible would add podcasting. You just have to have a subscription and you can then get your podcasts inside. It's that way. It's one app. I think that's not a bad move.
No, you know, it's just like these music services adding podcasts, and you know, why not a book service? So let's see. Last item I have on my list is Nick Kwa, who's the creator of Hot Pod. And I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. His day job is Panoply, which is another podcast company, and he's quitting. He's going to go do the newsletter full time. And I don't know what he's making with that or what his potential is, but hey, more power to him if he can do his own thing.
Yeah, I guess the question I have is, there's full-time money in newsletters? You know, it's like, wow, okay. Maybe I should take a second look. I haven't seen any of these really, you know, go firing off the launch pad as far as this digital content around podcasting. I guess if you can get it done, maybe they're going to take some capital and float it for a while and figure if they give it full-time attention, it can grow.
Right. And, you know, there's a couple of magazines out there now. I forget what that last one that I talked about last week, and I don't remember what it was, but that one came out. And then, you know, Nick's been doing this for probably a year or so, and apparently it's pretty popular. He came out a while back. He was on Tiny Letter, and he outgrew it. So he had too many, you know, apparently Tiny Letter only goes so big before you got to move. So he ended up moving it to, I think, MailChimp or something. But hey, more power to him. He's going to do it what is that? Boy, I'm having a hard time today.
It's a sleepy Saturday afternoon.
That is, yeah. We're recording on Saturday to be released on Wednesday. So let's get into the next segment here in a minute. So as you remember, we talked last week, I talked about last week what I do to get a podcast episode together, and I guess that inspired you, Jim, to maybe want to come on and explain your method.
Yeah, no, I don't normally do that. It was just as you were working through your workflow, and I was just like, you know, this would be a great, I'm glad you did it. I'll encourage you to maybe reach out to a few other podcasters to bring in. They'll all have different workflows. I have some unique things that I do that I don't mind talking about. So I thought I just reached out and said, "Hey, Mike, can I come on?" That's always a little sketchy when you get reached out to versus you reaching out to somebody. You know, you're like, are they trying to sell me something? But thanks for letting me come in and talk a little bit about my workflow.
Yeah, no problem. And like I said, you and I have worked together a couple times here and there on different shows and all that. Now, if it was somebody I didn't know that came in there, they'd have to convince me a little bit. But I know you, so hey, works for me.
Not good to go.
And you're one of the podcast gurus, so you know, as far as I'm concerned,
it's a little scary. That's scary that I'm in that group, but it's always fun to at least hear what's going on in the community. So let me, Mike, dive in from a pre-show standpoint, because I think as podcasters, you know, we have kind of a preparation phase that we go through. We have an actual recording phase that we go through, and then there's post-production. And so I kind of want to highlight all of those and jump in and interrupt me as we go through it. But I'm in a little bit of a unique situation to a lot of podcasters because I podcast both as a hobby, and it's really not, it's a business. I'm making money doing it on my own over at theaverageguy.tv. And then I get a chance to podcast at work, which is really, really cool. And we're growing that network, and it's getting more busy, not less. And we're now up to 3 podcasts on our network at Gallup. And so if you go to coaching.gallup.com, if you want to see what that looks like, that's our coaches blog. And I won't dive into those details, but there are some subtle differences between the two and how I approach the two from a planning perspective. I do come at them very, very similar, but when I think about and they're all interview from that standpoint. So I admitted to you early in the show, I can't do this alone. This solo podcasting stuff doesn't work for me, or I haven't tried it. And if I practiced it a little bit, I could probably do fine, but I'm much better with a co-host like this, with someone talking to somebody, live. We're not live, which is a little odd because I'm not getting any feedback right from the audience as we're doing.
I can make funny faces in the camera for you.
Yeah, I am seeing you. We started this with audio only, and I'm like, can we please use the camera? I need some feedback, right? So I rely, as a podcaster, rely on that feedback. But when we go into pre-production and I invite the guests, I run, in both scenarios, I run a spreadsheet that just has all the dates listed out with the subject and the guest. And at work, which is great, I have people who help me get the guests booked. I still book them all. But then it goes into, I have somebody else who helps me make sure they're set up and organized and communicated to, and an email goes out and they're scheduled. All those things, ship a mic to them. At Gallup, we ship a mic to every single guest that we have on. So we want to make sure we get good audio quality.
And which mic is this?
These ATR 2100s is what we ship. I'd love to be, have enough budget to ship pile, PR40s to them. Although I'm a 2100 everywhere we go. So that, to me, those are good enough. Well,
they're plenty good. I just like the way this looks.
Yeah, well, it's a good mic, right? It is a good, the Heil PR40 is a great mic. But for what we're doing, and I own about 25 of them at work, and we just ship them all around the country and make sure people have got them so they can keep them for a little bit and then ship them back. As a hobby, or on the averageguy.tv, I should stop saying hobby because I do make money doing it. But on the averageguy.tv side, a lot of times the guest I'm bringing on, I don't worry about that so much. They're either podcasters and they have their own equipment, or they're able to find or dig up the right equipment to get it done. So typically they have all the equipment that we need going forward. If they don't, I did an interview the other day with the CEO of Shelfie, and he was actually coming in from the floor of CES, and he was on a laptop, and it wasn't the greatest sound quality. In fact, it was pretty bad. But you get a little ambiance, you get a little sound. We got what we needed. I was okay with it, so we just kept rolling. This was a situation I would have loved to have a little bit better of audio, but hey, it's what I got. It was a great interview. We just pushed through.
Well, doing anything from the show floor of CES is pretty amazing at that. I know the Tech Podcast Network, they put on that live booth every year, and they use these headsets that I have for that, and that helps a lot. Plus, they're running a gate and all that, but they can't turn the gate up so much because you want that background. And but anyway, we don't want to get off on the microphone thing. But
it's a dynamic when you think about, when I podcast at conferences and we take these 2100s, you're going to get that noise. It's just going to happen. And sometimes you want it. I mean, it adds to the ambiance of it. But I think the key thing for me is I get these, I have my guests scheduled out 2 or 3 months in advance. So I'm constantly working to keep the schedule. I'll sit down for a weekend and invite a whole bunch of people. They'll respond over time. I get them filled in and I try to stay. You know, I might go after 8 or 9 people in a weekend to get them scheduled. And I'll get 3 or 4 of them out of that. And then that'll fill in a month. And I just try to stay 2 or 3 months ahead, both with Gallup and with theaverageguy.tv. That's really critical, especially on the Gallup side, because I have to keep that schedule. I've got a team that depends on knowing what's going on, or it's just not me, which right. is a blessing and a cursing, right? The blessing is it's just not me. The cursing is that I have to keep them. You have to tell them what to do. You know, if you don't tell them, they won't work for you. And so I have to keep those. So at work, we keep that just an Excel spreadsheet on the network. I use Google Docs for theaverageguy.tv. That works out pretty well to be able to keep track of people and when they're coming and when they're scheduled. Really important. We get those on calendars. I'm able to use, I know there's a lot of calendar functionality that's out there. I use Outlook, right? That's, I have it at work. That just works for me, right? This is one of those ways that works for me.
I use Google Calendar, but it's tied to Outlook on my phone and on my iPad.
Yeah. Yeah, same idea. I just really think I live and die by my calendar. So if it's not on the calendar, it doesn't exist. And I tell everybody, if you want my time, you absolutely have to get it on my calendar. Otherwise, I won't show up. And it's not because I'm trying to be mean. I just, that's how my, you know, my workflow kind of works. So then usually at work, before anybody comes on, we do a tech call. So up to a week or so in advance, we'll do a tech call where I get them on, we get the microphone plugged in. As easy as these 2100s are, they're still not drop dead easy. And we use Google Hangouts on both for theaverageguy.tv and for Gallup, although we're experimenting with Blab. So that platform, you know, we're going back and forth on those two platforms.
Yeah, I caught a little bit of your Blab show the other day
Gallup.
Yeah, for Gallup.
Yeah. Yeah, so we call that Theme Thursday, and it's work. It's work related, but we're on Blab and it works super. I mean, it's awesome to have that kind of exposure on Blab. And Blab's small enough still that it doesn't get out of control, which I like. We had 40 people at one point on there watching us for the Gallup one. And it was manageable. Any more on Blab than 40 or 50 in the chat room gets a little out of control. You know, it just goes by so fast. You have a hard time reading it and staying up with it. So so that's kind of the pre-show workflow. I really do feel like on the work podcast, that pre-call, that tech pre-call, get everything set up, get it tested, saves me a ton of problems on the day of the interview because they've been through it once.
Right, and that's something that those of us that do solo shows most of the time don't have to mess with.
Right. No, you don't, and it's a benefit. The other thing I don't like to do is I don't like to have – if I'm even in like on campus at Gallup, if we're going to do the interview, I don't like to do two people in the same room. I would rather we have separate offices that we do them in. It just works better for me. The workflow works a little bit better and it's quieter. You know, I don't have to deal with dueling mics in the same room. However, we just did a Gallup learning series this week. I had the host in a table next to me, you know, kind of kitty corner for me, in 2100s. Running through a mixer, and I was able to mute and unmute and just kind of make that work. And I think we got pretty good sound. The mics were far enough away. We didn't get an echo. They weren't so far away that you got that weird echo, that weird distance echo. And so that worked just out fine. But my preference on that, Mike, is just get everybody in their own room. It kind of sets up a quieter environment for them if they're individual.
Yeah, I've found that I do better when I'm alone in the room, whether I'm talking to somebody or not. As you know, I do some radio, and one of the stations I do a music show on, I'm there by myself completely. There's, you know, no producers, there's no, you know, nobody running the board. I'm running the board, everything. I'm there by myself. I can lock the door, turn the lights out if I want, and I love that. But then I work at another place where, you know, it's the morning zoo, and it's a zoo in that room. So, you know. It works. You know, yeah. You just have to block it out and go. But
yeah. Well, and two, if you're trying to, so if you're using cameras, so you're recording these for video and you got people in the same room, no matter how hard you try, you're going to look, you know, like the people can't see me now, but I'm going to look away and look at the person when I'm talking to him, as opposed to looking to him in the camera. And of course, it looks weird when you're looking off camera. Yeah, and so
well, the setup we're doing right now, I have Skype over on a monitor over here on the left. So I'm looking at your picture
right
on the
right.
left. So I'm not looking at the camera.
No, and if you're recording, you know, if you're a video podcaster, that's I think it's important that you at least try to look the same direction as the camera and some of those kinds of things. So it's, again, that's a preference. That's just kind of what I do. That's just kind of how we set it up. At Gallup, we have a dedicated room that's a studio, which is really, really nice. It's fairly quiet. The equipment stays set up. I don't have to worry about tearing it down. That's my recommendation, even for the hobby podcasters, find a place you don't have to set the equipment up and tear it down. Mess with it, because you know the deal. Anytime you move something, doesn't matter if you didn't turn any knobs, it's always different the second time you set it up, right, Mike?
That is true, because I have that, and I do leave mine set up, and I still have that problem. I'll start, like I said last week, you know, I'll go fire everything back up, and for some reason, this one isn't talking to that one, and you know, it's one of those things. You gotta get your tech right, and it's easier if it stays set up.
And the more complex your setup, the harder or the easier it is for things to go wrong. You know, I always try to err on the side of simplicity than on complexity. And I know you can do all these things, but it's one of those things where I really prefer to try and keep it as simple as possible. When we talk about mix minus here a little bit later at the end, because I know you're going to ask me about that. I'll tell you why I like to keep it simple with mix minus, but that is that's kind of the pre-show workflow that I kind of go through if we think about setup and how I do it. Let's talk a little bit about recording. And so when we do the recording piece, like I mentioned a few minutes ago, we used to do, I was 100% Google Hangouts for absolutely everything. It was just one of those kind of situations. It just worked. It worked well for me. It was an environment that happened. Recording, I'm foreign to trying to record Skype calls. I'm foreign to all the other ways people do it. Hangouts were and Mike, I would just record the audio that came right off the Hangouts. I'm not one of these that tries to do double enders or, you know, all those other kinds of things recorded. I was just always happy, for me, good enough with the audio.
I was going to ask you what recording hardware or software you were using. So you just take whatever Hangouts gives you and exactly. Rip the audio out of it.
Rip it right out. And for me, that worked. You know, you can use Audacity. You install the FFmpeg encoder. You can take that MP4, drop it into Audacity. The WAV file shows up. You edit it, export it. And that's, for me, that's good. I do sacrifice a little bit of audio quality in that case, but nobody's ever complained. Like, my listeners are like, oh, can you make the audio quality any better? No, nobody's ever said that.
Yeah, those of us that... I've been into podcasting for a while, especially, you know, like Dave, me, Daniel, Ray, all those guys, you know, we're audio snobs, and I'm less so than some of them, because a lot of times I'll just, you know, do whatever's the quickest and easiest too, you know, and you know, your audio quality doesn't need to be like, you know, perfect. It just needs to be so it isn't distracting when somebody's listening.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, and be comfortable with what you want to provide. That was a choice I made early to just give that quality to my listeners. And like I said, nobody has ever complained about the current quality setting. So that worked for me. I'm actually finding I get a better now. This is a very qualified statement, but since we've moved to Blab, I like the Blab audio that comes off of it way better than I like the Hangouts audio. And so it just sounds, whether it sounds, you know, for audio files, they may not, it's lower quality, whatever. To my ears, it sounds better. It's easier for me to listen to. So I do the same thing with Blab. I just record it and rip it right off. And even though they provide an MP3, I just rip it right out of the MP4, and I'm good with it.
Right, yeah, that might be better audio than the MP3 they're sending.
I don't know. And Mike, this is one of those kinds of things as podcasters, I kind of go, let your ears decide. Don't get stuck on the kilobits and the bit rates and that stuff does matter, right? It does matter. But if it sounds good to you, go with it. Like, don't get so hung up on it. If you like it and you're comfortable with it and you want to send it out, do it. Don't worry so much about all the technical stuff behind it.
Like I said, as almost anybody will tell you, you can overdo the analysis and never get anything done if you're going for perfection or there's no reason to tweak it. If you're happy with 64 mono, then go with it. If you've got some reason to go stereo. It's great. The only thing I always warn people about is, don't go too high in the bit rate because, people are unlimited bandwidth have to download it as well. So, get it to the lowest bit rate you can tolerate. don't go much below 64, but
yeah, that's a great point. And where it really matters is size. And so if you're producing, I have had listeners, especially in the UK where they're kind of capped, say, hey, can you get that? Because I was producing in an hour show, my files were about 80 or 90 megs. Mm-hmm. And they were like, hey, can you bring that down more like 50 or 60? And I could have. I did. I could and I did to kind of make those a little bit smaller for them because it mattered. And so I did get that kind of feedback. So those from a platform standpoint, I have just relied. And this is why, to go to the mix minus point, this is why I don't necessarily have to use a mix minus, is because Google's doing it for me or Blab is doing it for me from that standpoint. And yeah, people say, but what happens if the Blab recording gets messed up? Well, I can say what happens when your voice recorder stops working, right? I mean,
it happens to everybody.
It does. And I used to do them where I recorded it and then I double recorded it on a PC so that I had it no matter what. And I haven't had a failure. I never have had a failure. Now, could it happen? It absolutely could. Will it happen? Probably at some point. But to me, it hasn't been worth the extra risk. Now, a year ago, I started recording on a second PC, and I broadcast that to Spreaker. So I bring a second PC in that has an audio jumper. Either you can do it physically with a cable, where you come out of the speaker port and go back into the microphone port, and then it's listening. Then if you started a Hangout or you started a Blab, right, that the audio would be coming out of the speaker port, right? And then you're capturing it back in the microphone port. And that Spreaker will pick that up as a recording source. And you can push it right into Spreaker. And so I do have an audio backup from if things were to fail. I could pull that audio off of Spreaker now to get it done. But that second PC, and yeah, I know this, it's an expensive option for some people, $400, $500, $600 to have a second PC on hand. I'm a PC guy. Right. So I always have a second PC around, right? That always works for me. And so that's been a technique I've been using to kind of reduce my risk. So I do have a backup copy of it going to Spreaker, and that's worked out really well. I bought the Spreaker app. They've got the app. I know Blueberry does too. I think, don't they? Do you guys offer an app service, or am I thinking of Libsyn?
That's Libsyn that has the app.
Yeah. Well, I bought the Spreaker app, $100 to get that done. And so there's a Home Gadget Geeks app that is fed by the Spreaker feed. And so my live shows go live on Spreaker, and then it's kind of a second recording and a backup. So I'm kind of trusting the cloud, Mike, and maybe that's a little scary for some people, but I own a Tascam. This is not true. I own a Tascam TR7, which is the older one, smaller. They were $99. I never use it except when I'm on the road recording.
Yeah, it's same with my recorder anymore. It's the only time I ever use it's on the road. I record right into Audition on the Mac here, and
yeah,
knock on wood, haven't had too much trouble.
I do live to the hard drive, and I have a lot of friends that podcaster friends that use audio recorders, and I cannot tell you how often to me they're like, "Oh, yeah, I filled up the, or I forgot to push the button,
or the battery died."
The battery died, or the settings got in and it was peaking. And I'm like, because those auto recorders are small. It's hard to tell exactly what you're hearing unless you're monitoring the output of them as your primary source. And so I hear a lot of guys say that to me. Oh yeah, I messed it up. And I'm like, I can't remember the last time I messed up a live to the hard drive. If it's not working, the audience will hear it, so I can adjust right away.
Well, that's another reason to go live.
Right. It is a good reason to go live sometimes. because you can hear that. So that's just my preference. That's just I've kind of lived dangerously. Allegedly, I have air quotes going on right now. I live where everything records in the cloud. And you know, we've talked a lot about Zencastr over the last couple weeks because it's been the latest shiny object. And that would be another good way to do a kind of a backup, get it running, set it and forget it. And it's always your backup copy if your other audio fails for any reason. But I'm totally comfortable recording in the cloud.
Yeah, it does work. And you know, like I said, with Blab and the way you're doing it with Hangouts on Air, you know, that you have that backup up there. So, and you use that as your primary as well. So that, hey, why not?
Yeah, it's worked for me more often than not. In fact, I can't, in the last 2 years, I can't even remember a time it didn't work. And so I've just gotten, you know, I've gotten kind of settled in on it, especially from an audio standpoint. So those are my two. I can't emphasize the fact though, Mike, this having the second PC is kind of an off-site. And I've even done this virtually in the cloud, which is interesting, using Microsoft Azure. But having the second PC with an audio jumper gives you some flexibility and really allows you to do some things that you don't have to have a complicated mixer set up and a mix minus to get it done. Now, if you like mix minus, that's great. And I do expect hate mail because I fall into the you don't need a mix minus camp. In fact, I think mix minus oftentimes causes more problems. You know, it's because I didn't get my mix minus exactly right. Well, again, keep it simple in the sense that you don't have to always do that and set it up that way. So if you listen to me on Ask the Podcast Coach, you know that's the running joke.
That's why I brought it up.
Yeah, it's good. It's a good one to bring up as well. So that's kind of how I record.
Because if I reach over and turn this little red knob, you'll start hearing yourself.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's really, as a new podcaster, that's really frustrating to figure out all those things and then have to figure out mix minus at the same time.
It is one of the hardest things to teach or to explain to somebody what you mean by mix minus and, you know, why it is that they're, you know, getting echo through their mixer. But, you know, sometimes it's necessary and sometimes it's not, you know.
Hey, people want to do it. I'm totally fine with it. If you can make it work right, do it. I just don't think you have to in all cases. So,
right.
I'll stay on that. Mike Phillips hates it when I say those kinds of things. So Mike, sorry.
Well, the main reason I use a mix minus is when I do have a guest on and I want to play sound effects.
Yes.
You know,
dude, what's up with that?
You know, I can play a sound effect.
Yep.
And
you can. For sure. And I can too. I just have a little pass-through button I have to push.
Yeah.
And you can't talk at the same time.
Yeah.
So that piece works. But you know, you're 100% right. I'm also a big believer in not playing music live. I really like to get, I think from a production standpoint, I get better quality if I'm playing the sound bites or the music after the fact because I can fade it in and out. Sometimes ducking happens, right? When you're trying to do this and you have, you know, your duplexing's not right depending on the platform. Blab is particularly bad about this.
Mm-hmm.
If you're bringing in audio on a different channel and then it'll duck and it'll kind of mess up. I'm not a big fan of music live. I'd rather mix it in after the fact.
Right. And that's what I do here with, you know, the bumps between segments and the intro, outro, all that goes in post-production as I explained.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and that's just my preference. I think you get more control of it that way. So after we're done with the podcast and we shut those down, I record, you know, the next thing I do is download, you know, in Blab, it takes, I don't know, 10 or 15 minutes. In Hangouts, it takes 20 to become available. Usually that night I'll download it, but I don't mess with it. I like to give it 24 hours kind of before, one, I'm exhausted usually when we get done, but two, in the workflow, I just like to wait till the next day. We record on Thursdays here at Home Gadget Geek. So usually Friday night, I download the video file, bring it down. I'm pretty simple. I'm a Windows guy, so I use Windows Movie Maker, which works just great for some simple edits. The quality of the audio is pretty much passed through. It's a free tool if you're on Windows. Microsoft has not updated it forever, so who knows how long that's going to be out there for. But Windows Movie Maker brings it in. I slice off the beginning and the end. Mike, I'm a one-take wonder on live. I do very little edits in between. I just don't see the point in it, unless it's really bad, right?
Yeah, I don't do much editing, even though I do in segments. I don't do a lot of editing within the segments.
Yeah. And that's a choice some podcasters have to make. You know, there's some ums and ahs that we're going to do that I just put up with. I think people hear those more than we think they do. You know, in other words, most people just, it blows right on by them unless you point it out, right?
Yeah, exactly. And the thing, you know, I want my, if I'm doing an interview, or in this case, we're kind of just talking about your setup and, you know, doing a joint thing here. When I do that, I want it to sound like you and I are sitting across the table at the coffee shop or the bar or whatever, without all the background noise. And, you know, people talk over each other. They say, and, you know, sneeze and cough. If it's obvious, I'll take it out, or I'll reach over and hit the cough button, or, you know, whatever. But, you know, I think it sounds more authentic. You know, we're not broadcasters. We're not professional broadcasters. And even if you are, even if you listen to broadcast radio now, it doesn't sound a whole lot different, you know, because, you know, the people on there, it isn't like, you know, you're in a sealed up booth with a glass door and a producer on the other side. That doesn't happen in radio either. It's basically a cubicle is the studio in an office. Right. They leave the door open. People are walking by. There's no glass, you know, there's no soundproof booth thing going on anymore.
No. Now, and it's interesting because people are just willing to put up with more than they used to be. And I think I've always said that this digital, you know, this digital content we create is so disposable that I think people understand that it's not going to be made with that kind of high quality production attention that it used to get in years past when it was perfect and they did multiple takes when it was in soundproof rooms. I think for the most part, people enjoy, like you said, authentic, I think is the key word.
Yeah, it's... You know, you look at some of the NPR-style podcasts that we like to complain about and or talk about or whatever. You know, they're great. They're, you know, but these guys do these, all the recording over maybe a week's time, and then they spend 2 weeks editing, and, you know, it's nuts.
I think
but
it's
it sounds
than that.
Good.
But it, yeah, yeah, I think it's longer than that. But yeah. You know what, though? Even in their vocal recording, they're not that crazy about the quality always being the best. I've heard on Radiolab, I've heard those guys record off voice recorders, and they blend it in and make it. The deal is, Mike, is they got great content, and right. So we're willing to work with that because the content is great, and so we always say, Dave Jackson and I say all the time, you know, work on great content because that's really at the end of the day what matters.
Exactly. And, you know, people accuse me of having an NPR style, but I listen to the NPR podcast. I said, man, I wish I could sound that good, you know?
Yeah, no, for sure. We're toying with the idea of an NPR style podcast at Gallup. And man, I got about 3 weeks into it and I'm like, holy crap, this is a ton of work. I'm not sure, you know, I'm Mr. Disposable Podcast. I get on, I talk, I edit, it's done, you know? And so, it's neither here nor there, but you know, you choose what you want to put, the effort you want to put in. You talk mostly to podcasters. I think they know this.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to mention Todd over at Geek News Central, New Media Show, Blueberry, whatever, Todd Cochran. He will not edit. I mean, unless it's something extreme. It's, you know, whatever when he hits record and then he hits stop, he might trim the end a little bit, but there's no editing there. And he's a firm believer in that. And
yeah, I don't think there's value there for the most part, to be honest. If you got an audience, the kind of show will dictate it. But if you're going through and you're spending 2 hours editing 1 hour, I'm not sure those 2 hours you're ever going to get back. And I'm not sure it's of great value. Now, you determine, right? You be comfortable with whatever quality you're putting out. It's your show. So you don't let anybody tell you what you can and can't do. You do it the way you want to do it. It's your show. All right. Let's talk a little bit about post-production.
Okay.
When we get to this point. So for me, we've been talking about post-production in the sense of what we keep and what we don't keep. But then there's this little tiny thing of distribution when we think what we're done, right? We've recorded it. I've told you I don't do many edits to it. I produce an MP4 and MP3. I do also use Handbrake to rip down the video. So I create a version for YouTube that is it's pretty big, right? I mean, right. I'm trying to feed as much quality into YouTube as I can. And then I take that and crunch that down into a 960 and a 320 version of the video, which makes it a third smaller and a third smaller. So I get down to about 600 meg on the 960, and I get down to about 250, 300 meg for an hour show on the video small. And I've been pushing those over to MediaFire, and this was kind of an experiment. I was like, would anybody watch a video RSS feed if I produced it? I'd had some folks asking for it before. I was really surprised. I get a couple hundred downloads of those versions every single month. And so we keep doing it. MediaFire's, you know, $50 a year or so as a media host provider. I'll never fill that. They give you a terabyte of space and 10 terabytes of bandwidth every single month. I'll never fill that thing up. And so
never say never.
Well, that's true. That's true. You're probably right. But that has worked for me for now, just in an experiment. And boy, you know, it's an experiment that you don't want to have to undo, because moving from MediaFire to Elipson or moving from MediaFire to anybody else, I'm going to have to go in and manually change every single link, because MediaFire has you don't get your own, it's not your own host provider, right? And it's mediafire.com/a whole bunch of numbers/ and then their structure. Right. So I know going in, like, I've created a little bit of a beast for myself. I saw this as kind of low value. If I needed to unwind from it, it wouldn't be such a big deal. So I don't know, Mike, you're on the other side. You see this as, if I was a Blueberry customer would I have a way of hosting my video on Blueberry if I wanted it there?
Yeah. It would be more expensive than what you're paying now by several magnitudes of anyway, but yeah. Definitely. There's even if you're using WordPress and PowerPress, which I think you are, even for that, those feeds, there's a couple of links you can click over there, and it'll import all of that to the Blueberry servers, and it's it's doable.
Maybe that'd be a backup, right? I could, if I ever had to get off of MediaFire, and I could buy a plan on Blueberry. I'm going to pay more money, but I could buy it. Then I could import using my RSS feed, right? I could import all those files over.
Yes.
Right. Oh, so good. So I would be okay.
Yeah, and being that it's video and it's huge like that, they charge for bandwidth and storage, as opposed to the unlimited plans for the normal podcaster.
Right.
So how much value that would be to to your particular use case, who knows? But
it's good to know it can be done, and I think for most podcasters, it's good to know that service exists, just because Hey, if I'm going with right now, if this ever goes south, there is a pretty quick way to migrate to Blueberry and get up and running pretty quickly, and then do a damage assessment, like, okay, how much is this really going to cost me long term? And what do I need to do, right? Do you deal with that in the work that you do? How often are you dealing with those kinds of situations?
Oh, a lot. The ones that we've built tools to help with are the ones where you're locked in, like Podbean and a few others that are locked in. And I understand they're changing things at some of those places too, but a lot of people, when we migrate, we have to migrate the whole thing, the blog posts, the media, the whole thing. And so we've got tools built right into PowerPress now and at Blueberry itself that we can do that. So we can migrate all your posts. And then we can migrate the media and switch all the links in the media, and then there's tools built right in for that. And we do that quite a bit. I would say, I don't know, I can't even think of a good number, but I'd say at least daily I'm dealing with at least one that's moving from some service to some other service, to our service.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good number. But, I mean, when you think about that, how often that's happening. So I think as a podcaster, it is something you need to think about, and you need to have a backout plan. Like, hey, because it could be anybody. I mean, sure. Lipson could someday, Rob could be like, guys, we're done. We're not screwing around anymore. We're done.
Yeah, and, I doubt it, but that's possible.
No, I get it. I get that. And I'm not trying to preach a demise, but I think with any of these companies, you need to, Blueberry included, you need to kind of think through, hey, what would happen if there was a major financial disaster at one of these companies and they decide, hey, we're closing up shop. Now, I think both of those companies, including Spreaker, is a good bet. Like at this point, they're being run well. They're financed well. They got guys in the community. I mean, we think of both Rob and Todd, and they're in the community. So like there's transparency. They're podcasters themselves. So I think they're good bets. But just like backing up your PC at home, it's always good to have a backup plan. Hey, what would I do if one day I got that letter?
Yeah. And you know, like I said, it's not unheard of. There's been large companies like that, not in the podcasting space, but there's been things that have been, you know, super hot. Look at MySpace. What if you put all your social media marketing and you know, instead of building your own web page, you built a presence on MySpace, and then all of a sudden they flip the switch on you.
Right.
Where do you go?
Yeah.
What do you do?
The smart podcaster knows what he does, what they're going to do. Like, hey, if this happens, I know I'm going to do this so that I can move. So I think that's kind of an important point. One of the things that I might do that might be unusual, and I see this question, we hear it a little bit on Ask the Podcast Coach from time to time. I see this a lot on Facebook and in the Google groups, is where else can I post to? You know, so I'm trying to get more exposure, and where else can I post to? And I think our general answer always is, hey, the media channels you work to are the ones that you post to, unless you work them, they're really not going to provide that much for you. However, over the last couple of years, because I speak on this all the time with Dave on Ask the Podcast Coach, I have subscribed to a lot of these services and have stuck with some of them. Now, some I get a dozen maybe listens a week, as opposed to others I get 70, 80, 90. And so I kind of feel like, hey, if I'm getting those kind of numbers, I should probably still post
it. Yeah,
it's
probably worth it.
In the SoundCloud, and I know we hammer SoundCloud a lot in this community, I get maybe a dozen. And people say, is it worth it? I don't know. It takes me 10 minutes or maybe last 5 minutes to post to SoundCloud every week. I delete a file, add one back in. I keep thinking, hey, it's not killing me. I'm not paying anything for it. I might as well try. You never know, right? You never know what kind of who you're going to pick up or who's going to be out there. And so when I'm done, so I get all this done, I post the post, I check everything out, right? I'm a WordPress guy, so I post it to WordPress. I go in, I make sure everything's tagged right with PowerPress. I test everything, right? I go back to the original page. I hit the play button to make sure it's working. I hit the video button to make sure it's working. I even have set up so I know my video RSS feeds, because they're not visible. I use the channel feature in PowerPress for those. And I can't see him, so I got to wait for him to hit the feed. I even check those. So once I'm done with that, then I kind of go out to these other communities. And I'll just list them. We won't talk a lot about them, but kind of want to go through the ones I'm – and if I missed one, if you're listening to this and I missed one, love for you to send me jim@theaverageguy.tv and tell me what I missed, because I know I don't have them all. And I love to keep track of them, just because it's interesting to talk about.
Yeah, Daniel Lewis has a directory of that sort of thing. And so does Rob Walsh.
Yeah.
Of all these different podcast directories. And a lot of people say be everywhere, you know. Yeah, maybe.
It takes time though.
Mike. Yeah.
This is the thing. Coming from my side, it's an extra hour to post all these. So if you're going to do this, and trust me, it's a copy and paste, it's a copy and paste thing. I don't get creative on them, but it literally, to roll through this list really quick, it takes me about an hour to get all these posted and then set up tweets for each one of them. So let me roll through them real quick. So after we go YouTube, that's an obvious one, right? I post them to YouTube and put the embed in there. We do Spreaker and Audioboom, Podomatic, which is where I started. And that's where I've got 70 to 100 listeners out there still listening to me on Podomatic. Use a free plan. I just rotate them out. SoundCloud, Vimeo, Buzzsprout, which has not been great. Buzzsprout has been bizarre. But I'm still kind of messing with it just so I can talk about it. Shout Engine, which has been pretty cool. They have a limited bandwidth plan, but that's kind of a cool one to check out. If you haven't looked at Shout Engine, they're doing some interesting things with their UI. Mixcloud, AudioMac, which I just got contacted by Mixcloud this week. They're trying to lure more podcasters in, and I got that email. Hey, we saw you have an interesting podcast out here. Would you be interested in some of our marketing models? You know, so they're starting to kind of think through how do they monetize podcasts out on Mixcloud. Mixcloud's more of a music site than it is, and they're kind of following the way of
SoundCloud.
But we'll see. Again, for free. I don't pay for any of these, by the way. Audio Mac. I do ship mine to archive.org, both audio and video. Go out there.
Now, another good backup.
Yeah. No, super good backup, right? My audio and my video large go out to archive.org. And again, I don't tell anybody it's out there. And I get anywhere from 5 to 10 views within 30 days out there. Again, if everything was going to go down, there's always a copy of them out there at archive.org.
But,
you know,
but don't use archive.org as your main host. Correct. It's not meant for that. And if too many people do that, they're going to disappear.
Right. They're trying to just archive the internet, not serve. You can do it, but they're not trying to serve podcasts. So really, really, really good point on that. You know, last year at this time, podcast.com kind of raised their flag, and they haven't done anything in a year, but it hasn't gone anywhere either. And they haven't done anything. I mean, but I put them there and I get a few views every week on podcast.com.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to have that URL, by the way.
Keeping track of all those stats has got to be a hassle.
I don't. Yeah, you know what? I don't, to be honest with you. I kind of know when I'm going into post, I kind of check. So one of the things, I go into post and I look. And I know I get 2 or 3 here and 5 there and 70 there. And I kind of roll that into 100. It's kind of my number, right?
Sure.
I get 100.
Yeah, so some people obsess about stats. And if you're trying to monetize your podcast with advertising, well, you got to know your stats. But you're just doing it for a hobby. You know, yeah, it's gee whiz, but it's not like earth shattering to most people.
If you're a hobby podcaster and time is important to you, you don't want to do any of this.
Yeah.
Just run it out through your RSS feed, post it on Facebook, make sure it's in iTunes. I mean, those are the big players, right? We think of it's got to be on iTunes for sure. You should absolutely be posting it on Facebook for sure, because those are, you know, 99% of the world are on those two platforms exactly. For the most part. You know, you're going to get your most bang for your buck right on those two. But again, I'm unusual. I talk about podcasting a lot and I want to be kind of in the know. The best way to be in the know is to just post my podcast there.
Yeah.
And that's how I know Buzzsprout's piece of crap.
Of course, make sure you're in the Blueberry directory. Actually, you probably are in the Blueberry directory now because we just expanded that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and Blueberry was one of the very first sites I came to, and I use Blueberry stats. For what I'm doing. I'm a WordPress guy. I use PowerPress from that standpoint. Last thing I do is push it up to Clamor. I create a few Clamors and push them out there just to kind of see what I get out of that. I haven't gotten Clamor-like blab kind of peaked and then it's been kind of just steady. I maybe get 30 views on Clamor for anything I post out there if I'm lucky. But they've made some concessions to make it very, very easy for you to post on Clamor now. And so it doesn't hurt. And sometimes I do that when I'm standing in line at the grocery store or whatever. I'll I'll post something on Clamor.
I haven't done enough with Clamor to know how to operate it yet. You know, like I said, it's kind of neat, but you know, I did a blast of them here, you know, I don't know, maybe 6 months ago and just said, you know what? When I'm done recording, you know, like as you said, you don't want to spend a whole lot of time at the end. You spend maybe an hour. I bet you I spend less than that. You know, once the file's done, it's up and gone. You know, I've got a few places I stick it and that's it.
Well, and I probably spend 4 hours total when you think about the work, the pre-show work, the recording, the post-production, and then pushing these to these, and then I do set up all my social campaigns. So I go to Facebook, I go to Twitter, I post them on Google+, and in the Twitter world, all these different services have different Twitter cards. And so you have the ability to try different, you know, I try different things with them to see what kind of traction I'm going to get on Twitter. So that Twitter posting probably takes another 20 minutes to get them kind of all set and organized to go to Twitter. I drive everything back to my site, by the way. I don't, you know, from a promotion. Well, that's not necessarily true. When I'm tweeting from SoundCloud, it's going to go to the SoundCloud site for them. But on SoundCloud, the links to get back to my site are all there. I'm a little crazy. One, it's because I podcast about podcasting. So I want to stay up with all these things. But people ask me all the time, what do you do? Well, here you go. There's a list of the ones that I know of work. If you've got others that you want you know, you want me to try, send me an email, jim@theaverageguy.tv, and I'll certainly add it to my list.
Right, and you can send them to me too, and I'll make sure Jim gets them. And I need to start getting into more of that end of it. See, I focus more on the technical, you know, which buttons to push, what cables to plug in, and, you know, what software to use and that kind of stuff. So it's good to hear, you know, somebody else's workflow with, you know, with the marketing sort of at the end there. And because, like I said, with me, it's, you know, I throw it out to Facebook, I throw it up on Twitter, I've got a few places it automatically goes through the RSS feed, and I don't do any of the manual stuff. So,
you know, Mike, just as a final note, it's really interesting when we think about Twitter, all this stuff that we do and all this marketing we do for our podcast. And a couple months ago, I set up an automatic tweet to tweet out the weather for Omaha. I get more silly engagement on that weather tweet than I get on anything I've ever done podcasting. You have no idea what's ever going to hit on some of these, on some of these social media things. It's so crazy. I tweet this weather. I bet I get two or three responses for that weather tweet every single day. It's just funny. People will respond to that. And now, will that add to my podcasting at all? I don't know.
Probably not. I set one of those up too, and I do get some weird stuff now and again. So, all right, well, let's wrap this segment up, and we'll finish up and get everybody on their way. All right, well, thanks, Jim, for telling us about your workflow and all that, and much more. This was a great show. Went a little longer than we normally do, but the content is worth it.
Well, anytime you get me talking, Mike, you're going to go a while. So thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's like a lot of us that podcast about podcasting. Once you get started, it's just go, 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 go. And as we were talking about in the break off, Mike, I find it that talking with somebody would probably make a difference. You know, the solo podcasting, you know, that's my workflow. That's what I do, solo podcasting for the most part. I think it might be of value at some point to bring on a co-host.
Yeah, you know, you should ask the listeners. I mean, you've been doing this a while, and you've got a pretty dedicated group of listeners. I'm being one. I admit it. I listen to this show every single week. And yeah, ask them. You know, have them give you feedback. Do they like this, or do they like the solo? You might be surprised. There may be some folks who really tune in for the single voice every single week.
Sure.
But you never know.
And that's probably what I'll do because you know, like, I was saying in my spiel about workflow last week, I record in segments, and some of those segments might not even be the same day. And how am I going to do that with a co-host and say, hey, I got an idea, can you be on Skype in 15 minutes? You know, that isn't going to work. So it would definitely be a big format change. So I'm not really planning on it, but you know, every once in a while. So Jim, you were my first official co-host, as we were, you know, guest co-host.
Yes.
So
good. Been, well, I enjoyed being on here, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
It's been a lot of fun. So hey, if you guys got any questions for me to answer, it's been kind of lean here lately on the question department. You can email me at podcasthelpdesk@gmail.com. Of course, the guy in the outro will tell you that too, so we won't go into that too much. But along the right sidebar of the website currently, we've got offers there. So if you want to get a free month of hosting at Blueberry, there's a banner there, or you just use help desk at the checkout. And I think we've got one for Bluehost. There's one for Dreamhost for hosting your website. And Amazon, of course, I always say that. You click on the Amazon link if you're going to go shop over there anyway. Doesn't cost you anything. Gives me a little bit of credit for that. Actually, it gives me a gift card, and I buy Star Trek books or something. But hey, whatever. But anyway, Jim, where can people find you?
Yeah, everything's out at The Average Guy, all one word, theaverageguy.tv.
Okay, very good. And of course, you can find me at Podcast Help Desk, occasionally on the Ask the Podcast Coach show with Jim and Dave every Saturday at 10:30 Eastern. Over on the Blab network, or the Blab service, whatever. It's a fun show.
It is good. And easiest way to find that, askthepodcastcoach.com/live.
Right, exactly. And if they change platforms, which they've been known to do, you'll still be able to find
them. We test everything. That's one of the things about that show. Dave and I are not afraid to try something new that morning.
I definitely like the move to Blab, and I think it's really helped the show over there. You know, not that we're going to sit here and talk about Blab. Don't you have a sound effect that you play? Oh, wait a minute. I think I might even have that sound. Yeah, I did. I played that this morning.
Perfect.
All right. So let's quit talking about Blab. Let everybody get on to the next podcast. So we'll catch you guys next week.
Thanks for listening to the Podcast Help Desk. If you would like Mike to answer your question on the show, email podcasthelpdesk@gmail.com, or better yet, record a voice message at podcasthelpdesk.com. See you next time.